The purpose of this next interview is not to put anyone off of eating their holiday turkey, ham, or pot roast. Matthew Scully has written what critics have described as an important, eloquent, and controversial new book, in which he says there's a great outrage going on all around us in the scale of cruelty that human beings can inflict on animals, in the cold, confining concrete pens of vast industrial farms, in the congested cages of medical research labs, and in the new technology of blood sports. Animal rights is not the term he uses so much as animal welfare. Mr. Scully may also be considered a somewhat surprising source for this impassioned argument. Until June of this year, he was a senior speechwriter to President George W. Bush. Mr. Scully is also a former speechwriter for Vice President Dan Quayle, Vice President Dick Cheney, and the former literary editor of National Review. His new book is called Dominion, The Power of Man, The Suffering of Animals, and The Call to Mercy. He joins us in our studios. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you begin with consideration of that Genesis passage and suggest it's dominion doesn't mean doing whatever you want.
It doesn't mean license. You know, it's not a grant of license. It's a charge. You know, whether you read Genesis literally or allegorically, there's something very beautiful about it. It defines the relationship that human beings have with the other creatures of the world. And I think that any clear reading of it leaves one with a sense of responsibility for other creatures, mm-hmm. you know, who are ever more powerless against the power of mankind.
Let me, in fact, read this section because it's thoughtfully right in front of us. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." That's Genesis 1:24, 1:26. You suggest that in a sense, over the years, we have violated a kind of compact.
It's a funny thing because I think that people are in many ways more concerned about animals than ever before. But at the same time, we do tolerate in our laws horrific things that we could not stand to see for ourselves if we had to see them. Industrial farming is the example that hits most people closest to home.
Well, let me get you to tell about that, because you went to one of these farms in North Carolina, as I recall.
That's a hog farm. That's right. You know, in the case of pigs, they're just warehoused. They're just locked up without any regard for their needs. They're confined not only to these grim little sheds I describe in the book, mm-hmm. but in the case of sows, inside these small iron pens, which prevent them even from moving.
Because of the miracle of in vitro fertilization,
right.
and other drugs, they give birth to litters which are enormous and unsafe.
Well, I think it can be from a dozen to 18 piglets, you know, per sow, as against the normal number, which I think is around 7 or 8.
Because it's more cost productive for a hog to deliver.
Well, sure,
deliver.
They're just
birds.
Basically they have they're first put in gestation crates after they're artificially impregnated. And they stay there for 16 and a half weeks, never moving, never going outside, mm-hmm. frankly going mad, if you see it, just frenziedly chewing on bars, desperately trying to move, or else just dejectedly lying there like heaps of flesh, and so on until their hour comes and they're just trucked off to a slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible, too, because a pig, as anyone who's been around a pig knows, it's a sensitive, intelligent creature, very much like your dog. And you just have to imagine what it would be like for a dog to be confined that way, mercilessly, for 3 or 4 years, to imagine what these creatures experience. Mm-hmm. It's this complete reduction of these animals to machines. We've all always known that livestock farming had a harsh aspect, you know, by definition. But we had the consolation of believing that these animals had something like a life, that they were treated like living creatures and their basic needs were respected. Now we can't assume that anymore. All mercies have been withdrawn. They have nothing. They have nothing.
And what about the argument that, in fact, you certainly suggest that you've heard in the book, that if the end result is slaughter, is it just sentimental nonsense to think it's worthwhile to put a few more feet in the cages, to let pigs or any other animal that's being bred for slaughter out to frolic and see the sunlight? Or
not at all. Not at all, because obviously their fate is slaughter. And it's worth recalling that even for that, we have some very minimal laws, the Humane Slaughter Act, which is supposed to prevent the worst horrors for these creatures and is supposed to grant them a merciful death. That, by the way, goes routinely ignored. But we've forgotten their need for a merciful life.
You acknowledge in the book that there are people who believe that anyone who begins to talk about animal welfare belongs to some kind of a fringe, and that they care more about animals than they do about people.
Well, I think that that's an accusation often made, certainly. But I like to point out that in most cases that turns out to be a false choice. You know, you take the cruelties of industrial farming. Well, it doesn't take a great deal more effort, and it takes just a little more money to buy meat humanely raised than it does to just casually give your business to factory farms.
There are people who will say this is going to make the price of protein just a lot higher in the United States of America, and that this is one of the things that we do well. We deliver a healthy diet, and that includes meat and fowl.
Right. Well, but there's a problem with that kind of logic, which is that if you follow it far enough, you're left without any standard at all. Sure, we all know how factory farming came about because it saves land, it saves labor, and it saves in cost, and therefore the consumer at the other end pays much less. But conceivably, you could dream up even worse privations to inflict on these animals to save still more money. And you have to ask yourself at a certain point, where do we stop? Where do we assert moral values over economic values? Mm-hmm. And I've always believed that this argument should appeal especially to conservatives who endlessly talk on other subjects about moral values. Conservatives, above all, should understand that you cannot completely sacrifice ethical and humane values to economic values.
Is there any part that you would like to read?
Perhaps the end of chapter 6.
Yes, please.
You may remember that I was the plan was for me to be given a tour of the slaughterhouse at Tar Heel, where every day something like 32,000 creatures now meet their end. I was actually a little bit relieved that in the end I didn't have to do that. And so I described the feeling of leaving the scene behind. Even if you had no idea where you were, you would sense that something bad happens here. The feel of the place, the size of it, and this busyness late at night make you want to flee. Delivery for slaughter is supposed to be so precisely calibrated that the trucks hardly come to a stop until they're at the chutes, which are in the back of the plant, facing the Cape Fear River. It's just like the back of a supermarket, where the docks and bins are, the plant itself serving as a giant wall to shield us from what's going on. But tonight the line is long, so they have to wait their turn. Hundreds of eyes look out from between the grating at me, at the plant, at the other eyes and trucks. The line is backed up because Easter is approaching, and in the South, Easter means ham. And all that ham, after all the curing and treating, must be ready for when folks gather at their tables to celebrate the hope of the world. Leaving here, one feels a terrible loneliness. It is a scene of abandonment. Thomas Hardy in Jude the Obscure describes the last moments of a pig Jude and his wife Arabella have slaughtered, and how after the struggle the dying animal's cry assumed its third and final tone, the shriek of agony, his glazing eyes riveting themselves on Arabella with the eloquently keen reproach of a creature recognizing at last the treachery of those who had seemed his only friends. Close quote. Now one might say there is no more element of surprise because there is no more kindness. The treacheries begin on the day they are born. From the start, they must feel they are in the hands of an enemy. No creature of the factory farm goes to its death feeling betrayed by friends.
Mr. Scully, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Matthew Scully, author of the new book, Dominion, The Power of Man, The Suffering of Animals, and The Call to Mercy.